Okay, hello. Sinead?
Hi.
Okay, I'm pretty sure we're recording. Yep, all looks great. So, it's awesome to have you back again.
It's been too long.
Yeah.
But maybe it's also been just the right amount of time to, it always seems to be that way.
Yeah, and I feel that, you know, we've talked here and there, but I think it's good that we haven't talked because we have a lot of things to say.
Yeah, I think that's what you do. You go out and you live, and then you put it all together, and that's when it's the right time. That's what, you know, I said to you yesterday, to enjoy your pregnancy, because that's what it's like, you know, when we decided we'd do this.
Yeah.
It is, but you become pregnant, and then when the time is right, which is right now, boom, out it comes.
Yeah.
And you have no idea what the baby's going to look like, what it's going to weigh or anything, but you just know that it's there and it wants to be born.
Yep.
So I was thinking, the note you left for me, I thought was kind of a good way to start. You said, had I heard about the shootings in New York?
Yeah.
And you were saying that you hope that it doesn't mean the bringing in of the, what are they called?
Drones.
Oh, yeah, the drones.
And, yeah, like these surveillance drones.
Yeah. And anything that sort of goes out now in the truth movement or whatever is probably going, for the next few days, will be about this.
Yeah, oh, of course.
And I said to you also, you know, it might be about, that they want to try and, you know, get rid of all the guns in America.
Right.
And that's the standard conversation to have. But, you know, what I said to you was, well, we're just going down a different path.
Yeah.
You know, if we look into that, you know, and we could do, we will go nowhere.
No, we won't.
And what we want to do today is actually really kind of go back so that we can go forward.
Yeah.
I've read quite a lot of work from of Edward de Bono. And yeah, and he's just brilliant as far as helping us to think differently, because that may be our largest, biggest, most dangerous problem, is that we actually don't know how to think. And I got a few quotes here. One was, he was saying that our thinking, our current thinking, is mainly concerned with processing ideas. So we start with an accepted concept, then put it together in the proper way to reach the conclusion. He goes on to say that it's assumed that the starting concepts are valid because they are the established ways of looking at things. So it means we've always done it this way, therefore it must be right, and all you've got to do is just, you know, just keep going and you'll get the right answer or whatever it is at some point.
Yeah.
And he talks about the need to alter out the way that we think and actually look at the starting concept. So what we are tending to do is take the concept that's already been prepared for us for eons, and we start from there.
Yeah, that's like a foundation that was made for us, not that we built ourselves.
Exactly, exactly, exactly. So that's kind of where we're coming in today. We are coming in to look at the foundations of everything and to question why they have to be, but also to see, if we look at them properly, we can see that they don't work very well. And the foundation that we're talking about at the moment, and we may go into other things, but it's the family.
Yeah, yeah.
Another?
And the family in all aspects of, you know, from the beginning of being brought into the world and to the very end, you know, you taking care of your parents, the whole entire thing.
Exactly. Now, there's one other thing I want to bring in here with de Bono, just to throw into the mix, is that he talks about the sequence trap. He says the information that comes in, the sequence with which information comes into us completely affects how we look at things in the future. So what he's saying is that incoming information alters the connections in the brain's nerve fibers in a way that makes them react differently to future information. So what happens at the beginning sets up particular connections, and then any incoming information must follow those pre-arranged patterns.
Yeah, exactly, or pathways, or just a frame of thinking, like you're a little box.
That's right. So, and you put it, everything gets put in. So what is the beginning for us? What is that original, it's the original concept that we go into, is the family. It's the family unit, and we have just been trained from the word go that a family unit is the correct way to grow up. And it's just that some aren't so good, but really it is the best. And, you know, just you just need to change a few things and then it will be all right. You know, everything will be all right.
Right.
Instead of looking at, well, perhaps the family unit is absolutely fucked. Or perhaps once upon a time it worked well. What do we know? We've only been living on this earth not so long, you know. Right. Perhaps eons ago or in certain other different societies, the family works well. But within the West, it doesn't work.
No, I think it's actually become toxic.
It's extremely toxic. And again, sorry, I'll butt in there and say that's something Edward de Bono says as well, is that we don't have a concept in English that says that something can be good up to a point, and then after that it just becomes more and more toxic to us, like salt.
Yes. Yes, it's like that rock logic, right, where it's set in stone and there's no other way around it. It's just stuck there.
That's right, that's right. And yes, it worked well to start with. Often things work well for a while, like salt on your food. You know, you put it on, oh, tastes nice, improves the flavor, lovely. Yeah, but you get to a point where it's just, oh, Jesus, I can't eat that. It's disgusting.
Much.
The food hasn't changed, but what you've been adding on, you reached your saturation point, you went over it, and you are in a place, well, it's dangerous to you, you know?
Yep.
Too much salt is dangerous to you, as is.
It is toxic.
It is, it is. So we don't have this balance. It's like we've given up so much to, because the original concept seemed to work, we therefore go, oh, well, it must just be right.
Right. Okay. And we get down on ourselves for feeling unhappy. We're like, oh, I shouldn't feel bad about this because, you know, everybody else is living life this way. So it must be my fault.
That's right. And if I could just fix myself up.
Right.
You know, it's something I'm doing wrong.
Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, the majority of us aren't blissfully happy at all. Quite opposite of that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we go back and we blame ourselves, or we go back and we blame, you know, we grew up blaming the mother, you know, that was the new thing to be, you know, brought into, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And, but we haven't looked at the entire family unit as a whole and how it is. Another thing Edward de Bono talks about is that the way our brain works, it forms patterns. And apparently this has been, with brain research, been sort of proven. He said this a long, long time ago. So the way our brain works is it forms patterns. That's why it can learn things so fast. That's why children learn so much within a few years, because they've got the pattern. So they've got a pattern for how to put their clothes on, the pattern for how to eat your food. They learn the pattern of how to tie their shoes, the pattern of how to read. Brilliant.
Yes.
The problem is that once you've got a pattern instilled in you, it's there. Very, very hard to change. And the thinking system of the West does not really let you change that. It goes, no, that's right. You just move on and do the next thing.
Keep on going.
That's right. You keep on going. You know, so you keep on. What if you're keeping on going down the wrong road?
Yeah. A very wrong road that leads to death in all directions.
That's right. And that's where we are now. We've gone so far down this road. Maybe it was good for a while. I don't know. I didn't live in that bit.
Maybe it was necessary at some point.
Yeah.
You know, maybe
it
was how it survived, but times are very different and our thinking is changing rapidly, most
That's
of us.
Right. It could just be that. Where we are now, who we are now, you know, we cannot go back to the past and go, oh, look at that. We'll learn from that. This was a good time. We need to be like that, because we're not those people. You know, you can't go back to say that your Wild West, you know, go, oh, back in the good old days. And because
right.
You couldn't, even if you tried to do it, you can't do it, because you have all this new experience. You know what it's like to use a mobile phone or a washing machine or whatever. You can't pretend. Back then, they didn't have that.
Yeah.
So we would know what we're missing. We our brains are structured to fit into the time that we're living in. But the thing is that we are basing so much of our existence on concepts that are thousands of years old. You know, one of these is the family and how it is the right way to be. But
right, and also the different roles within the family.
Exactly.
So what a father is, what a mother is, what a child is, a good child, what they have to do.
That's right, what a good child is. Now, you look at this, a family is actually, I just thought about this the other day, a family is actually a pattern.
Wow.
And it is. So you have your family pattern, I have my family pattern. Within that pattern, so the child comes in and is put into their correct place within that pattern. So they are structured and molded to fit the pattern, not to be who they are, but to fit the pattern.
Right.
So, and really when you think about it, that's huge. And I think where we are at the moment is we're going, this pattern is strangling me. This pattern is suffocating me.
Yeah. It's like wearing something that's too small for you and you just feel constricted.
That's right. And you're in a box now where you've breathed up all the air. There's no air left for you. The thing is, some of the family members, it's quite bizarre. And in fact, often I'd say maybe even quite a few of the family members will go, no, it's all right. There's nothing wrong. You know, it's got a few problems, but I'm staying here. I like it. This is how it should be. But often you have the one pain in the ass who goes, this is killing me and I need out.
Which everybody, I think, wants to say that. They just don't know how to put it into words. They have that feeling, but the pattern is so strong. So for them to think outside of that pattern or to go against it.
Yeah. Well, I think one of the things is you put so much into the pattern. You imbue so much of your life energy into it. Like, well, what am I going to be if I don't have the pattern, you know?
Yeah.
It's easy scary. To complain, but... So, So the family is a pattern. Well, I made a few notes before, so I was going, you've got your one main leader and your backup. That's normally how it is in a family.
Right.
You don't normally have two parents equally. You've got your dominating one and your backup.
Yes.
And, their job is to teach the children to fit into the pattern of the family. Now, I think that's actually a really huge idea because we say, no, the family is there to help you children learn to adjust to society and to become a part of a hot, bigger world. Actually, I think that's bullshit.
Yeah,
I think within a family, it's all about fitting into that family. The society, outer world, that's really pushed way down the track. The first thing is you fit into your family.
I mean, just think about, my family, for example. All of them are in the medical profession. And, you know, it's not heavily pushed on me, but it's kind of like, yeah, well, this is what our family does. So, you know, you should kind of follow suit. And it's just interesting how everybody... for a couple generations now has been in the same field of work.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Like, I mean, at family gatherings, everybody's talking about that kind of stuff. Oh, what new medication is out? Oh, what medication are you on? You know, and it's seriously, that's, I remember my cousins used to just laugh at our Thanksgiving dinner at the kids' table, just being like, listen to them talk. Like, it's ridiculous. Over Thanksgiving dinner, oh, what antidepressant are you trying these days, and what are you prescribing to your patients? And
wow, yeah.
I mean, I remember I was an only child. I remember sitting there at the dinner table with my two parents, and they would just be going back and forth. My dad's a doctor, my mom's, and so they would be having all these medical discussions, and it was almost like I had to like learn that language to kind of be on their same level.
Do you think maybe one of your family, because I think it might be really useful for us to learn our family patterns, to like to actually give names and labels to them so that they have less of a hold on us.
Right.
Would you say that with your, that healing or that medical profession, would you say it's medical or healing?
Oh, medical. It's not healing. Okay. I'm the crazy hippie that talks about, you know, natural cures and homeopathy. It's definitely medical, scientific, and pharmaceutical.
Okay. Would you say also it's more like there's something wrong with people out there that has to be
Absolutely. And I feel like that was kind of, what's the right word? I don't want to say like enforced, but that was an idea that was given to me a lot was what's wrong with you? You know, like there's a problem with everybody. There's always a problem and it has to be fixed. You know, like just certain friends that I would have, you know, my mom would be like, well, I think they have a drug problem or I think they're an alcoholic. They always jump to a diagnosis with people. And I always tell them, you know, who are you to say that this person's an alcoholic? I mean, some people it's obvious they're an alcoholic, but you know, it always seemed like there had to be a diagnosis for something.
Okay. Do you think that was a pushing out from anything that's within them, sort of not looking at things within themselves to push out on the rest of the world?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
because it's easy for them to treat a symptom, you know, like depression, but for them to really look deeper, I don't think they're ready or willing to do that.
Yeah, there's our boxing system again. You know, you've got a concept, you've got an idea, so you don't even need to look at, you know, what brought that into existence. Right. You just jump on the name and then you go from there. So there's not looking at the origins of it. Dorothy Rowe, who I've been reading a lot about, she reckons that depression comes from two things. It comes from, one, growing up to be good, being taught to be good, and you do have to be taught to be good.
It's
not natural, not the goodness that we are. And the other one is that you have to have a belief in a just world.
Mm.
So those are like the two basis, she says, for depression. And she's worked for like just decades and decades, you know, with depression. And she says, normally what will happen is that second one, so the person has been doing their best to be the good person all their life, then something happens that disrupts their belief in a just world, something so unfair, something that just they cannot compute, so to speak, and it just throws them into this place of depression. Again, there's it's so unnatural, you know, but to look at it that way as opposed to, you know, it's just something you take the drugs and then you can manage it.
Right.
You know, as opposed to, there it is again, that's that. So you've got your concept of depression, so that exists, that's accepted by everyone, so you move on to the next bit, which is take the drugs. But if you do this more healthy thinking that De Bono talks about, we go back and look at the actual concept of depression in the first place, take that apart. What does that mean, you know?
Mm.
So that's what we want to do, again, with families. It's such a sacred place, a family. Dorothy, go on.
I was going to say, absolutely. I mean, think about it. You have a family crest. I mean, we had one that was hanging up in the house.
You do. And you have, someone says to me today, a family code.
Mm-hmm.
So that you can say things to different members of your family. And if someone on the outside was listening, they would go, yeah, well, that's all right. And whereas you would know, World War III, IV, and V has just occurred. You know, because of these secret coded. Yeah. You know, it's the lightest touch within a family and you can, you know, virtually nearly wipe somebody out.
Yeah, it's very true.
And isn't that really, really dangerous? I mean, you think about it. We keep being brought back to the horrors of the world, you know, and we have World War One and World War Two and all the other horrors.
Yeah.
But the more I look at it, the worst horror in the world is the family unit. And the deliberate blindness of people to look at the family unit, even if you've got a so-called happy family unit, the thing is, it's a pattern. Patterns are wonderful to a point, then they become restrictive and dangerous, and you need to cut across the pattern to create new patterns. We live by patterns, so there's nothing wrong with a pattern.
Right.
Where we fall apart is when we keep the same pattern. And then we put it on the next generation and the next generation.
And it doesn't work.
No, it doesn't. Because each succeeding generation as well, you think about the amount of, you know, you take two people, put them together, the amount of DNA that's passed down. So, you know, we are exponentially more amazing in a sort of biological sense than our parents.
Right.
You know, and then any children we have are the same to us because... Yep. You know, you've got the DNA, again, of two people come together.
Yeah.
So, and then you're trying to put these amazing and increasingly amazing or people in the same tiny box.
Yeah.
And we are, I believe, at a point now where it can't. It's destruction. So what, I was thinking that maybe it's almost like this pattern reminded me of Hal from... 2001. You know, it's as if this pattern is alive and it seeks only to keep itself alive.
Mm.
So this pattern called family is like feasting upon, and with each successive generation there's less and less room to move in.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I felt with family is that for a family pattern to work, it must be extremely open to outside influence. So patterns, the pattern can be interrupted again and again. And it's, see, what we do is with family is we just open it up to extended family. It's all the right. same fucking pattern, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all the same pattern because that's what's happened. So it seems to me for health to be there, you must allow in strangers, the most wide range of strangers into your home, into your family, to mix with your children. Like, oh my God, no, it'll all be, they'll be pedophiles and they'll come in and they'll, you know, it's such bullshit. It's such bullshit. Pretty much all the pedophiles, they're already there in the family.
Yeah.
You know, very rare that it's a stranger. It's the fam. Again, there's that sickness within the family, but oh God, the family's sacred. We mustn't say anything against it.
Right. And they'll take that to the grave.
Yeah. So I grew up in a family. Now, only this year have I understood the depth of mental illness, because we were told my mother had depression, therefore depression it was. Right. Yet I knew since I was about 5, possibly before that, there was something seriously wrong, but nobody talks about it. So the fact that so no outsiders can come into our family, it's a very locked down, closed world. That's sickness number one. If you live in a family where outsiders are not welcome, okay, yes, there's sickness in there. And I don't mean extended family, because they're part of the same pattern.
Right.
So you have to have this outside influence to maintain the health of the parents, in a sense, you know, the outside, if the parents are fucked, they're going to pass it on to the children. It's pretty much always the way it's going to be, you know?
Yeah.
So, you know, the people within a family, the people who most need teaching are the parents, okay? The kids are cool and groovy. They're fine.
Yeah.
Okay? It's the parents who have to keep, in a sense, being slapped in the face. You know, wake up, don't fall asleep, don't fall back in that pattern, you know? Yeah. Let's break these patterns and make newer patterns, okay?
Yep.
Can
I just read you something?
Right.
I just looked up the definition of cult, right? Because we were talking about this before.
Oh, you said that once before, and I always thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Thank you. So there's a couple here. One of them says, a group or sect bound together by veneration of the same thing, person, ideal, etc.
Mm-hmm.
A group having a sacred ideology and a set of rites centering around their sacred symbols, like the family crest.
Yes.
And then another one is the object of such devotion. So, I mean, cult's a pretty heavy word, and if I said to anybody a family is a cult, they would bite my head off. But, I mean, if you really take a look at it, it is, especially if you're not inviting outsiders in for their opinion, then it is.
look, Sinead, I would come and kiss your feet for saying that, because... it is groundbreaking and absolute genius and brilliance. And, you know, as you were reading that out, I was thinking, yeah, you know, what is the center of the family? People go, oh, it's the parent. I don't think so. It's the concept of family.
Right. And also keeping up appearances, you know, what will the neighbors think? And, you know, it's always constantly fitting into that box.
That's right. So it's the word family, which I looked up the etymology. I think it means household servant originally.
Wow.
And so we keep trying to live up to this idea and this ideal of family.
Yeah.
And for so many people, the more and more I look at it, it's a twisted place because no one's really broken it down to look at it. No one's questioning it. It's so fucking sacred.
Oh, yeah.
And all the faults of the world are now blamed because the family unit is being broken up. You know, you've got more single parents. And Jesus, those of us who grew up in that kind of a family would have just begged to leave the sick one and go and be with the other parent, you know?
Right.
There is so much falseness and fakeness. And part of the reason I got so screwed up was because of your TV programs. American TV programs and happy families.
Yeah.
So, it's meant to be like that. And just, so you shut down more and more because there's something so wrong in your family. But you're not allowed to say anything. There is no space anywhere for you to speak. There's no space in the family for you to speak. Absolute silence there. There's no space anywhere. You know, the reason I do what I do now, why I can't even stop myself from doing what I do now, is at last being able to speak. And I won't shut up, and I won't. Well, part of the reason I won't shut up is because there's other people out there who need to hear this.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, they need the family unit to be taken down and given a bloody good kick in the pants, ripped apart.
Yeah.
Then let them put it together, create a new pattern that suits them.
Yeah.
You know, even down to things like the fact that parents sleep in the same bed.
Right.
You know, how many people, so you do it, and then you, how many people really hate that?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I remember even, like, I used to ask my parents if they didn't sleep in the same bed. I was like, why aren't you guys sleeping in the same bed? You guys don't love each other? You guys get a divorce? You know, it really concerned me. My mom would be like, oh, your dad snores, you know? I'm like, well, aren't you guys supposed to sleep together every night?
Mm-hmm. That's right. That is the symbol. You know, the really well-to-do, you know, the aristocratic families, they never did that. They had their own separate room. And honestly, it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
You're squeezing people back into this little contained unit. In a sense, you're squeezing them back into a family unit. That's something else in there. The family unit is so small. I've had this idea that we could liken a family to the game of Monopoly. Have you played that?
Yes.
Okay. So you have your family. Now everyone races out to grab as much land or buildings as they can and then hold on to them for dear life. So you've got, instead of how it actually should be is that within a family, you have got, say there's three kids and two parents. You've got five universes, five individual universes. And then within those, there's the universe is created with each individual relationship to one other person. But we're trained to see we've got one Monopoly board.
Mm.
So, sorry, I hope I'm not hogging the conversation.
No, not at all, please.
Okay, and it's quite good because I come from a family with siblings and you come from one without, so that's good that we can get a different richer perspective. So in my family, something happened about 2 months ago now with my sister, which I'm certainly not going to go into, but it shocked me so much that I started wondering, well, maybe siblings can have a really deep effect on each other, you know, because we're trained to think it's the parents, you know.
Right.
So I found a book by Dorothy Rowe called My Dearest Enemy, My Most Dangerous Friend. And she spent her entire life, I think she'd be 70s or 80s now, collecting stories about siblings because she'd had this awful relationship with her sister growing up. But again, it's never looked at. You know, there is very little attention given to siblings. But in actual fact, it's quite possible that the relationship you have with your siblings, if you've got them, is deeper and more... has a stronger effect on you than anything you had with your parents.
Hmm.
So that can be for the good, but very, very often it's not. And again, I think it comes back to the fact you've got your two parents, so you've got children vying for attention.
Right,
and
Competing.
That's right, very much so. And a lot of it comes down to who can be the goodest.
Or the favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To be the favorite, you have to be the good one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not because you've got an amazing personality or no. It's whoever pleases the parent or parents most. So, yes, you've got this massive competition going on. And how she explains it, it's as if one sibling or siblings try to annihilate the other. They try to, in a sense, wipe them off, even for, you know, wipe them off the face of the planet, even if it's for a small space of time. So they get to be the goodest, the best, the one who gets the attention.
Yeah.
Okay, so... The depth of this, it just, because I come from a family with siblings, it just like, Jesus Christ, she is so right. She is so right. Now, okay, so you've got that, and maybe that's quite normal to be, and maybe in a very healthy family, it's worked out. But in unhealthy families with these condensing patterns, because they condense each generation, bugger.
It'll come back.
Yeah, gotcha. Just keep talking. Anyway, so you've got these, so that's okay. If you've got unhealthy parents to start with and parents who are intent, even if maybe they don't realize it, on maintaining their particular family pattern, you know, with its, as you say, they have a crest, or however they can have a crest in many different ways. You know, there's almost like a flavor to a family.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So then you've got this unhealthiness of these children in a generally a lockdown environment competing for attention from parents who often really have fuck all to give. No, they might feed you 10, 20, 30% of what you need. And you're competing against however many siblings to try and get this little bit of attention. Yeah. And these siblings of yours are, you know, you can have deadly enemies with siblings. It's been called sibling rivalry, and people think that they understand what it means. They go, oh, yes, sibling rivalry, and forget all about it. Instead of a really in-depth look at what is there and the effect it has upon you in your life. One of the things that she said was quite often, maybe majority of time, I think that's what she said, that people will marry their brothers or their sisters and not their parents. You know how they say, oh, you married your mother, or, you know, they married your father. In actual fact, very often, no, you've married one of your siblings. You've married someone who is very similar to one of your siblings because you have this intense relationship with them in one way or another, often unspoken, unrealized, unacknowledged.
Mm-hmm.
So again, these are dynamics that are not talked about. They're not looked at.
No.
We're just going, oh, no, I came from this family and I'm going to pretend that everything's all right, or I might blame one person, or... But I won't look. I won't go, actually, this is not a very healthy environment. Now, if you had a healthy family would be, so you've got your siblings, if you've got siblings. Now, if you're bringing in outside people, if you are allowing them into your life, into your world, then suddenly the siblings have a way to feed themselves through a variety of people. You know, this person comes in and they happen to, have... an interest that relates to one child in particular, or someone to someone else. And so you can get fed. So you can get the food that generally, or I think quite often, the parents can't give you. And, you know, how are they meant to? It's the same ridiculousness that we have about lovers, you know, that they're going to be your best friend and, you know, great sex, and you're going to have lots of things in common and you want to do everything together. What bullshit? So they're saying that you're going to get everything from your parents? Is not possible. Are you there?
I am, yeah, I'm just thinking.
So you've grown up in something different, though. You grew up without siblings.
Yeah.
I from what you've said, sometimes I think you've grown up with masses of parental attention on you, but not of a healthy nature.
No, I felt very overprotective. Like, I understand where they're coming from because I can see how they think, you know, not that I agree with how they think. So it's understandable, I guess. But I don't know. I feel like, especially with my mom, I feel like she was one of 11, grew up with nothing, you know. And I feel like for me, she wanted to give me what she never had, mm-hmm. you know. So that's why she chose to only have one child and to put all of her energy into me.
Well, would you say she wanted to give you everything, she wanted to give you everything she'd never had, or in a sense she wanted to give to herself?
Yeah.
Via you. So you become the body through which she can fix up all the things that she never had for herself.
Yeah. I mean, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and it doesn't make her a bad person. Or, I mean, and there we go, good and bad again, but... If we don't stop at least for a little time and go, look, this is how it was, I think we just repeat the pattern, and that we don't understand how strong the pattern is.
Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the word family, and you get a picture in your head of a mother and a father and a few kids and a little house, and that's really as far as it goes.
It is. And the rest comes through the TV, really, or what you see. And here's something else. When you look at other families in the world, they look all right. And you think, God. And you keep quiet because no one else out there is going, my family is so fucked.
Right.
You know? And you know, how many people kill themselves at Christmas time because they've got no one to be with?
Yeah.
Whereas the people who are with their families at Christmas want to kill everybody else, you know, loathing and hatred, and everyone knows it, and yet they're back again next Christmas for the same thing.
Right, right. Yep. It's almost like in hope that you can finally make it work.
Yeah. Something, somehow it's going to be different. There's something that we don't learn, you know. There's something that, so we go out in the world and we look for friends to try and, you know, buoy us up. And okay, one of the things in, there's a book for anyone who grew up in a family, any sort of family with mental illness, and that includes depression, called When Madness Comes Home by Victoria Secunda, which the words don't even come for me to explain how brilliant that book is. How, because the woman grew up with a schizophrenic sister, every single page, every word she writes touches your heart. And she tells all the stories, and my God, the stories of what people went through, and the suffering of the normal family members, because everything is focused around the one ill person.
Yes.
The dynamics of the family is so askew. And then, and you know, for those children, they grow up, they leave, they go out into the world, and it all goes with them. Yeah. To have, to read on every single page, to have someone just, it's like a balm on your skin.
Mm.
And even though I'm saying for people who grew up with someone with mental illness, or the thing is, it looks to me like within the West, in a sense, that's most families.
I was just going to, you took the words from, I was writing it down. I would say that everybody, one member, multiple members in any family has mental illness. I'd say everybody living in Western society has mental illness.
Yeah. I'm going to agree with you 100%. Yeah.
I mean, you know, I'd say it's a spectrum too. So not everybody's going to be schizophrenic. Not everyone's going to hallucinate, you know, but people are just generally unhappy because they don't fit.
Well, it's not, and they don't fit because it doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's not, and in actual fact, one of the points she makes there, she talks about the three sort of basic things that happen to people who grow up in these kind of families. And I'm going to spread it out, like you say, to the West, is that, so they develop all these kind of strange things. There can be like hypervigilance, you know, you're always on the lookout for something. I've got that, you know, just always, you don't rest. You don't know what the threat is, but it's there. But what she says is that these are actually normal reactions to having grown up in abnormal circumstances.
Mm.
So in the West, you could say at the moment that, and everyone seems to have them, but, you know, God forbid that anyone actually, you know, admit to it. No, it's not me. You know, you might have a problem. I'm fine.
Yes. But,
these things that we struggle with so much are normal reactions to abnormal circumstances. So we may be actually quite fucked in the head, but actually, that is what's going to happen by being put for so long. You think about how long are you within one family system, one family unit, how many years? A long, long time. Longer than criminals spend in prison, you know, even for murder or something.
Yeah.
You know, and often you're not even allowed any visitors, you know? No visitors. And in prison, maybe you get to study something. There's no outlet. Within families, often there's no outlet.
No.
Suffering is extreme. I think part of the reason that we cannot get our heads around it is because it's one of those, you know, I've heard, what does it say? They say if you want someone, if you want to like pull a scam, you make it so huge that no one can comprehend it. So that's the Western family.
Yeah.
The sickness is so enormous, you cannot get your head around it.
Yeah.
So we go, oh, we'll just pick up, like, supposedly the worst of the worst, which are the ones that the media pull into our attention. And, I mean, God knows, we don't even know these days if they're not made up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, I've read that the story about Sybil, you know, the one with the...
multiple personalities.
Yeah, it's not true, it was made up.
But they make a movie out of it and everything.
Well, I know. Whereas my mother's name is Sybil. And
wow. Wow.
How did the psychiatrist miss that one? You know, how did he possibly miss that one?
Wow.
But so each of us, and we each have found our own ways to like twist ourselves out of shape enough to try and bend around the pain, to push it away into little corners. So I think you look at most Western people and they're very twisted.
Oh, yeah.
They are human beings, good human beings, not in the term of being good, just what human beings are essentially. Right. But so twisted in so many different ways and retwisted every day through things like the media, through the fear.
Oh, yeah.
You know, one of the most important ways to heal yourself, according to that book I'm reading, is the number one thing is you need to understand that you're safe. Mm. Now, what's the one thing that we're not allowed to know, that we're safe? And we are. If you're no longer living in your family and your family was not a good one, then you are reasonably safe.
Yeah.
But often we can't switch that off. We can't switch off. It's just we're so used to it. We actually haven't stood back to go, hang on a minute. I'm not in that situation anymore. And yet, but I keep reacting as if I was.
Right, right. Again, another pattern.
It's exactly so. So we have the family pattern. And then within that, or because of that, patterns were created within us. Because each of us is quite different. So the pattern that's in me is different to the pattern that's in my siblings.
Right.
And I've only understood that within just the last, because I kept trying to pull us all into the same group and look at us in the same way and understand why do I look so completely lunatic. And I feel like they want to look, you are completely lunatic because I'm not the same as them, because yeah. I feel things differently, because I processed it differently. Even the fact that I'm an introvert and, you know, like my sister's an extrovert. So you're going to deal with it. You're going to create the patterns and every experience, even if you are in the same family, every single experience of yours is a universe away from whatever your siblings had.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that's what I thought. I thought because none of my family would speak up, therefore I can't speak up because it's not real.
Right, right. You know,
because they won't say it's real. I can't let it be real for me.
Yeah.
There's that monopoly board again, you know. There's that, you know, down to like one little piece, you know, I've got one building somewhere or, you know, the cheapest of all. And, you know, it feels like everything else is taken up and I lost my voice for so long.
And it's hard when your thoughts and your feelings aren't validated from anybody. Then you start to question, oh, am I reading too much into this? Oh, am I overreacting? Oh, am I wrong? But when the way that you feel is completely correct and okay.
Well, that's right. The way that you feel is the way that you feel. And I mean, how often do we spend trying to push away the way that we feel, you know, just get rid of it, drug it in some way. So you would ask, where does that come from? You're not making it up. You don't want it, but there it is.
Yeah.
That is, if you want truth, you don't need to go any further than that. Even if, so what I've read is that it's like your feelings are the most sort of reliable. Your memories can actually be, they can get pretty mixed up. Even though you would swear black and white that this is the way it was.
Memories are like they're very fluid.
That's right. So every time you access a memory, it's being changed somewhat.
Yep.
Because it's not the real event. It's just the memory of it. So each time it gets changed. So sometimes it's better to let go if as much as you can of the memory of what you're so sure it is.
Right.
And I'll give a quick example. Just really brought it home to me was, I've mentioned this in my writing, about a movie I watched when I was quite small called The Swimmer. And it stayed with me all my life. The very ending bit where this guy finally gets back to his home. The whole movie is about him getting to his home. And he gets there and the house is completely empty and run down and all his family are gone. So all this energy about getting back to his family, we never really understand the story. Mm. And he's just like collapses in misery and they've all gone. And my memory said that he got back and there's a field. It's like one of your prairie type fields over there in America. And it's like a wooden shack and all the bits of wood are falling down. And you just look at it and you know they've all gone. So I watched the movie last year and it's like the ending comes up. And I'm like, what the fuck? So he goes back. He's walking through the tennis courts, this mansion that he used to live in. And the only way that you know there's no one there is because the camera pans around to the side where there's a broken window and you look through that enormous house to see that there's, you know, some furniture in the middle of the room, but everything else is empty. So that's, for me, is this prime example. My feelings were of absolute desolation, of being the family being all gone, all on your own. And my memory translated that into this little shack on a field, nothing else around, no one else around, this tiny small house. And yet the reality was, it's a mansion with tennis courts and he was a really wealthy. How did that happen, you know? But the feeling is the same.
Yeah.
The feeling of abandonment and being left, of that awfulness of family just going and leaving you behind, or that's the thing that just, that of being, of having no home, of having no place to go, that feeling.
Yeah.
That's my reality, my truth, not how the memory comes back through the, you know, the brain cells or synapses or whatever you call them. So if we're having these feelings and we're trying so hard to, and we're so scared of them running away from them, they are your reality. They come from somewhere. They seek your attention and we're so afraid of them.
Yeah.
You know, but you didn't make them up. You can't make them up.
Yeah, it's true.
So what would you say, Sinead, are your emotional feeling memories, if I asked you that about your childhood, without giving the memories, can you? Do you mind?
No, I don't mind. It's just honestly, and I've talked to people about this before, I have a hard time remembering a lot of my childhood. Like when I look at pictures and stuff, it will help bring back the memory. But if I just had to like kind of recap over my childhood, it's...
What about feelings though? Forget about the memories and just pull up the...
Remember, I had so much anger. Like, I mean, from a young age and no one understood, why are you so angry? Why are you so angry? Taking me to therapists and, you know, getting me counseling and why is she so angry? And I hopped around from therapist to therapist all my life because I needed anger management. And I mean, there was a point in my life when I was probably like 13 where both my parents had to pin me down to the ground because I was like just freaking out.
So would your anger become very physical, or was it through words, or?
It was both. It would be physical and through words. And I would just say some of the most hurtful things to my parents because I was so mad. So mad.
Wow.
I mean, it was just like rage. I threw a remote control. I mean, I was so young when I did this. And of course I lied after I did it, but I took a remote control in my bedroom and I threw it, but I don't think I meant to throw it through the window, but it broke one of the window panes. And then I was like, oh fuck. Like now I got to make something up because I'm going to be trapped in my, I'm going to be trapped in this room for the next week, grounded, not like not being able to see anybody. So I was like, oh, I fell and I hit my head and they knew I was like, but I tried. But yeah, I mean, I just had so much anger.
Okay, so I'll ask you this then. Do you feel like that anger was yours?
Yes,
what I mean to say is, like you're a natural part of you or a reaction to something?
I think a reaction to something.
Mm-hmm.
My dad, too, would get really angry. So, you know, maybe some of this I was taught how to handle situations from watching.
Uh-huh.
I mean, my dad would have really bad anger to the point where he would, like, you know, come into my room and, like, throw my things around and break something, you know. Like, he had a lot of anger as well, which he's gotten much better with. He's been going to counseling and stuff, but...
Do you think you might have used anger to help create some space for yourself?
Probably.
Like room to breathe?
Probably, yeah. Yeah.
And did you have, say, growing up, did you have many, did you have outside influence? Not, I don't mean influence, but outside that weren't family. Did you have?
Well, growing up, since I was an only child, I would always have friends over. And I lived on a really nice block when I was younger where everybody was around the same age and we'd all, you know, ride bikes together, hang out.
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing that always got me. Because my friends would always tell me, like, stop being mean to your mom. Like, she's so nice. Or, like, why are you so mean to your parents? And it made me feel like, I was like, oh, shit, you know, maybe I am being a little brat or something. But I felt like they didn't understand. I was like, you don't understand. You don't live with her all the time. I would always say.
And that's something else, too, that there is this mask that we put on, don't we? Just the mask that the families put on so that no one ever sees.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether is it like the code of the West where you don't ask or you don't see? You know, you have to agree to see whatever face a family is going to put onto the outside world.
Yeah.
You know, even if you can sense, because it does make me wonder, you know, how so much the shocking amount of suffering, honestly, you just can't even comprehend the level of it.
Yeah.
And no one sees, you know, what people have gone through. Again, yeah. I stand by it. I still say everyone in the truth movement comes from trauma backgrounds. It's the only way that you recognize that there's something seriously fucked up in this world, because you came from that.
Yeah.
You came from something that was seriously fucked up.
You're finally able to put your finger on that shitty feeling you've had your whole life.
Yeah, unfortunately, you now blame it on somebody else.
Right.
Rather than coming back and going, well, yes, that may be happening in the world, but first off, let's see, why am I reacting to that?
Right.
Because if I don't get clear on why I'm reacting to that, all I'm going to do for the rest of my life is point.
Yeah, or keep creating the same situation over and over again until you finally get sick of it.
you're going to keep finding it out there, and there's plenty of it out there to find.
Oh, yeah.
You're given all the clues again and again, you know, like you were shooting probably, you know, in New York. It's just more clues for people who, you know, in case their fingers are starting to drop, their pointing fingers are getting a little bit weak. Whoa, you know.
No, wait, there's somebody else.
Yeah, you get your fully erect pointing finger again. and I don't, you know, you're not going anywhere.
No.
So then... this is something, okay, this is what gets me. Let's say the truth movement does it. You know, they go, they sort it all out. They prove it's these people, and these people, this is happening, and it all comes out, and everyone goes, yes, yes, yeah, I see it, and it stops, okay? So everything is achieved. What are you bringing to the new world that we've just created?
Right, exactly. Now what?
You are going to bring, what's going to happen is now you have allowed, it's all going to start all over again, because you haven't changed one tiny iota of yourself. You've still got all your pain or your whatever it is that you didn't want to look at.
Yeah.
Okay, you're going to have to create the same scenario again so you can point your finger again. There's no respite for you. You have doomed yourself. You know, if you won't look, if you won't address reality, you have doomed yourself and everyone you care about to the same thing over and over again. So, you want to live in a new world? What are you going to bring to it? You know, what are you bringing to it?
Right.
What have you got to offer? What, your index finger? I'm just having a list here. Yes, we've got 60,000 index fingers already. We don't really need any more of those. You know, perhaps you could bring people skills or, you know, some kind of useful skill.
Right, or new ideas.
Yeah. You could, maybe you learn how to think, you know, practice how to think, practice how to create new patterns.
Right, exactly. Get off of that highway.
Exactly. Because otherwise you've got nothing but another highway. You're just going to create another highway, which is what happened for how long?
Oh, God.
I truly believe there is so much potential within this year or this time for change, for you to, maybe change isn't even the right word. No, to create something good for you.
Yeah. It's that simple. Instead of creating something that's outside of you that you have to constantly change yourself to fit into,
mm-hmm.
create your own thing that you fit perfectly into and you feel comfortable.
Yeah, and when you create, you're building up this energy which you give out to the world. So again, you know, I was on Kyle's show last week. I talked to him about this. Here we are again, okay?
Right.
We are here not – well, we're here for our own benefit because – we talk to each other and things get clearer and we increase our ability even just practicing to communicate and it's enjoyable. But also it comes out of us and to anyone who's listening is the our goodwill, our intention to benefit other people. And this, you and me come out of...
Are you still there?
What's that?
Sorry, I just thought I lost you for a second. Keep going.
Oh, no, I was going to say, you and me come out of the women's show way back, mm-hmm. way back in January, which feels like about 50 years ago now.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah? Okay. It was so monumental. For people who haven't listened, it's on the link to the podcast, but the effort that went in behind that, no one apart from us who did it will ever understand what was behind that. And I say too that Shannon and Catherine have both gone on. I don't even see them on Skype anymore. And they kind of blossomed out, from what I can see, into life a lot more, moved away from this. Anna, I was thinking that I would kind of, as well as dedicating this show to everyone, but I would also dedicate this to Anna, who is still, I think, within the family pattern and just so ready to leap, but it can be so hard, you know?
Yeah.
So hard for all of us.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't think there's... I think we're all so still entrenched within our own family patterns and just needing to understand that it's absolutely okay and necessary often to leave your family behind. And that seems to be such a sin, you know? Oh, you can't, you mustn't, you've got to be there.
Right.
I'd just like to say it's completely okay and normal and healthy and in your best interest for most people to leave their family behind.
Well, I mean, just think about in nature, right? I mean, do...
Exactly.
Do bears come back for, like, Thanksgiving? Do they, like, you know, do they worry about not getting the right Christmas present for their bear mom? You know,
I'm just writing it down because I'm going to call that. Do bears come... I'm going to call the show that. That's brilliant.
I mean, but it's true. Like, it's that obvious.
Well, and yet they certainly don't come back to look after their elderly parents.
No.
And
there's so much guilt that's put on us. I mean, even me now talking like this, something in the back of my head comes up and says, sorry, excuse the sirens. Something will come up in the back of my head and just say, oh no, like, that's fucked up. You shouldn't think that way. Like, you know, and even just thinking of my parents dying, I'm like, oh, I get really sad. And, you know, I'm like, oh, I should want to see them. And they kind of guilt me too. Like, if I don't talk to them, I feel like they hold money over my head. Like, well, we're helping you out. And, like, we're working to help you live. And I always say to them, I'm like, then stop. Like, then stop it. If you don't want to, you don't have to. I'm not like holding you hostage, telling me you have to give me money.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's their, because I feel like they know deep down inside that, you know what, if I'm really completely independent, I wouldn't really call. You know, I might like text once in a while, I'll be like, how are you? But I don't like having these conversations on the phone because I find myself always getting frustrated, even though I think I'm in a good place. I'm like, okay, you know what, I'm going to answer my mom's call. I'm feeling in a good mood. But something about it, I'll just get really upset and then I blame myself. I'm like, why are you getting so upset with her? She's just asking you questions. But I feel like the questions that she asks me are to keep me in check for what they think I should be or what they think I should be doing right now with my life. You know, always like, when are you going to get a real job? You know, and they're always helping me to find a job, which, you know, I'm thankful for that. Thank you for helping me. But I feel like they always need to check in with me, make sure that I'm following protocol, if that makes sense.
Oh, yeah. You said something early on there that I just wanted to hold on and not lose because one of the things that I love to do is to turn around and show back to people something that they've said that really jumps out.
Okay.
And it's not often, it's not actually what they say. It is the energy in their voice when they say it.
Yeah.
So with you, what you said was that you wouldn't really call them.
No.
And you had, for me, how I heard it, you had so much honesty, but also pain when you said that, because you understood in that sentence that you wouldn't really, you're not really that bothered. You know,
yeah.
you would do, but you just, it sounded to me like you just honestly accepted in that sentence, even though I think you came back and needed to sort of like, because it's very hard.
Yeah.
That, and I think for a lot of us, it's the same, and we feel so bad because it means that, does this mean we're such a terrible person that
right.
we don't care that much. I'll tell you a story because it really, it shocked my world. A friend of mine, her husband's 30 years older than her. They've been together nearly 30 years. So it's, you know, it's not a, but she comes from an Indian background, the English Indian. And he's okay. from a white background. So with Indians, they tend to stick very much together. So she really broke the mold by going out with someone when she was about 18, who's like nearly 30 years older than her and who's white and who'd been married before, twice before.
Oh.
So they caused her tremendous, just absolute agony for her over a period of 7 years.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, one she actually attempted to commit suicide.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And, you know, the psychiatrist said to her at the end, he said, there is nothing wrong with you. You just have to make a choice.
Yeah.
Now, I think with most of us, we've never made that choice. We have never chosen. We stay in the family and we try to live outside. And it doesn't mean that you disconnect from your family and you move and you never speak to them again. But it does seem to me that there's a very real need, like you say, just in the wild, to step off and live your own life, because you can't fit on that Monopoly board anymore, you know? Because of the rules of family the way they are, it's all right for some. Some family members, they don't care. They just seem to, they're willing to pay that price just to go that way. But for us, it's no good. For me, it was like, I can't breathe anymore. There's nothing here for me. I have to go. Yeah. I don't go to hurt. But if I stay, I will die. But what my friend said, just to finish it off, she was talking about her sister. And she said, what she said was, it just came out of nowhere. I asked her a question, you know, I can't remember what it was. And her response was, well, she doesn't matter to me. No, sorry, I got it wrong. She said, she's not important to me.
Mm.
And I was like, what? You can't. What? I mean, I went over and over in this in my mind. She said, her sister is not important to her. She loves her. She talks on Skype to her most days.
Right.
But she said, she's not important to me.
Mm.
Because, and I said, well, how long did it take that? She said it took 7 years to get there.
Wow.
It took 7 years. And I think a lot of us through realizing that her sister, her happiness didn't matter to her sister. Her sister wasn't willing to respect what was really important to her, what she needed to live, what were her choices. And so she reached this place where, her sister's not important to her. She loves her, but her sister doesn't rank anywhere high as far as her life choices go in anything.
Right.
She knows what matters to her is her husband, her life, you know, the things. And she's very clear on it. This is the thing I haven't seen anywhere, actually, the clarity with which she said that. No malice whatsoever. She just was so clear. This, I think, is what we do not have clarity about our families.
No. And I find myself a lot of the time trying to go back and fix things, trying to help my parents because I see them killing themselves slowly.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, I can go. And I see this too with a lot of my male friends, that they want to like save their family. They want to make lots of money so they can help their families or so they can try and save them. When I don't think A, that's our job, but B, I don't think it's possible.
No.
It's not. And like I try, and I used to get so frustrated
So I'd be like, don't eat that, don't drink that, don't take those pills. But they're not going to listen to me. I mean, I've had my dad almost died maybe like 4 months ago. He almost died. He almost had a heart attack. He had to have a stent put in his heart. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling him, Dad, you need to change the way that you eat. You need to like stop taking all these medications. And he literally told me to stop lecturing him. So yeah. It's like, I don't know.
There's something else I see here, or I think I see here, which is different levels of care.
Yeah.
So, there seems to be people, you can't just go, oh, a family's like this, blah, blah, blah. There are, each individual is completely different to each other individual. And there seem to be those who, I'm trying to get this, two levels. What I'm trying to say here is, I'll take you as an example, right? Your care towards your parents has a completely different feel to it to what you tell me about them. You seem to get to where people will guilt you. They will try to manipulate you or control you, or they will not honor your choices, or they will, in so many different ways, you're more like an item of something that they try to push the proper switches to make it work properly.
Yeah.
Whereas often in a return is we're putting heart and soul into trying to reach them and trying to help them.
Oh, yeah.
Do you get what I'm saying? There's two completely different levels. And I think part of it can come from the fact that because we are trying so hard to put life back into this unit, that we kind of think that they're doing the same towards us, and in actual fact, that's not the truth at all. You can have life sapping from one place and life being poured into from another place.
Yeah.
And again, there's this lack, this inability to see what is really going on. And it's because it hurts so much.
Yeah.
It has taken me all my life, and I'm still getting, and it hurts me so much to see, and I can't quite, I fight digesting it because I haven't wanted to know what I know. I haven't wanted to feel what I feel because I can't. How can it be that way? How can it? But it can. You know, that inhumanity it is very real, I'd say, in most families in varying degrees, and maybe coming at different times from varying people. And I think with my friend, you know, sort of that bottom line is, if someone is happy for you, if their goodwill is towards your happiness, towards your growth, you trust them.
Yeah.
But if they are putting their hands in and you know it. We already know it. We just have had no one say, see it. You need to see it. You need to acknowledge that this is what's happening.
Yeah. And even just how we call our parents parents, I'm not quite sure what the word breaks down to, but I don't think there's any real parenting going on anymore. I mean, If a parent is somebody that, you know, gives birth to a child and then sends them off to some place outside of their parenting to have their children taught. And I mean, and I'm talking schools, okay? I don't think it's bad to have your children go out and learn from a multitude of different people, but I mean school.
Yeah.
And then, you have to get a babysitter because you're working so much because you want to make all this money so you can send your child to the best school. And then, so basically, you're not really parenting your child. I mean, you feed them once in a while, you cook them dinner on the weekends, but you'll have family movie night, right? So you can sit down and all watch a nice program together.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, watch TV. I mean, how many families eat dinner in front of the TV? They don't even talk.
Yeah.
So I don't really think there's much parenting going on anymore because it's impossible to parent a child in this system that we've created.
Yeah. And you know, so that here again would be a perfect example of how this need to restructure this concept of parent. As you were talking, I was thinking, well, in that case, perhaps parents would be people who provide a home and sustenance and attention.
Yeah.
They step back and allow in these outsiders who are very different to enrich their children. And I'm not, we know school is absolutely fucked in the head. I think school is just, school is just the continuation of family.
Right. You have your
The family pattern has been first instilled into the children before the school pattern gets instilled on top of it. So it seems that perhaps, and I see so often, you know, families, they're so insular. You know, it's me, mine, ours, my child.
Yes,
Step away, get away from me. So that the parents that I would have, a real parent, I think, is now, you must allow strangers.
Absolutely.
In you, and let them just allow your children to blossom by introducing new ideas that are way outside your family pattern. Give your children the chance to live instead of just absorbing your pattern.
Right.
And I think what's necessary as well is to understand with parents that they can't do it. Even if they want to not repeat the pattern of their family, they live it and breathe it.
Yeah.
And no matter what goodwill they have, it's just in every fiber of their being, you know? You take any person, pop them back in their family, like for Christmas. Doesn't everyone go back to who they were when they were a kid? Haven't you lost all your grown-upness? It's gone.
Yeah.
You're back to your little space. So don't tell me that pattern isn't alive and kicking. It is. It's right there.
I was going to say something, but I completely forgot it.
Sorry. Talking too much. It's like, get it out.
Well, because when you talk, you spark ideas in my head, and it's like, there's so many, you know?
There is. You know, it's just.
I remember.
Yes.
Okay. I remember when we were speaking a while ago, and you were kind of saying how sometimes a child, well, most of the time, a child can be almost like a trauma dumping center where the parent kind of dumps all their trauma on the child.
Mm-hmm.
And I just was thinking of this show that we have here in the States called Toddlers and Tiaras. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you've heard of it. I mean, maybe not, but it's basically beauty pageants for very young children, like 2 to 4.
Right.
And they're dressing up like little sluts. It's disgusting. But you see these mothers, mm-hmm. and they're so invested in it. And I feel that it's something that they never got, or they want to like make up for something that they lost, and they're putting it on their children. It's completely fucked. And the fact that we even make a television show out of it and people watch it and they say, oh, that's so funny. What the fuck?
Yep. I see them. I see the mothers these days walking around with their daughters, and the mothers are usually very sedately dressed. You know, these are mothers of especially teenagers.
Yeah.
And the teenagers, they're young teenagers who look like old teenagers, you know?
Yes. Oh, and the mothers are more than happy to buy them all the latest fashions and all the latest prostitute wear.
That's right. And
they don't parade them around proudly.
Yeah, they seem proud of their daughters. You know, your daughter looks like, you know, prostitute, or she looks like she's, you know, at least 5 years older than she actually is.
Yeah.
And you are proud of that. I don't understand. What's wrong with you?
It
seems like I don't know whether it's something has been input into the mothers so that, whether they're competing with other mothers to see, you know, not exactly to see whose daughter, but because there is some, within women, there is, there's a whole, we know, you know, there's a whole world going on that men have absolutely no idea. There's the woman's civilization. They wouldn't even know it if you told it to them.
Yeah.
And all the rules and all the codes. It's a pattern too. Actually, there we go again. The women thing is a pattern. It's a very tight, controlled,
nasty,
rigid pattern. It's nasty as. And you step outside the pattern and...
Hell will break loose.
Oh, yeah. Ripped to shreds.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, inside the pattern is varying degrees of death.
Oh, yeah. outright.
Yeah, it is. It's a nasty, nasty place. And yeah, I can't be there. I can't.
No.
I mean, I know the rules. I could do it.
Right.
It's death.
But you wouldn't be authentic.
Well, that's the last thing. Come on, who wants an authentic woman? Certainly men don't. It's very rare that a man wants an authentic woman. They are just not. Authentic means that you're real on the inside. And it's pretty much, if you're a woman, the only thing that really doesn't matter is what's on the inside.
Yeah, that's the last thing.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an unfortunate byproduct of having a good-looking body, you know.
Oh, that's so annoying. She's
it speaks and it thinks, yes.
That's so annoying. Can't I just turn her off?
Yeah.
Mute button, please.
Yeah, it's a horrible, it's hard to, I've had this thing in my life where not being, in my younger days, not being considered too bad-looking, and do you know what it's felt like for me? But I so hate being looked at. I can't stand having my face looked at. But, you know, what it's felt like with men, especially, you know, say in my 20s, was this is how it felt, okay? I'm not saying this is what it is, but it felt like having my face sucked off.
Mm. Okay?
It's like I look on the outsides while I'm sitting in a very cold, horrible place on a hard chair, just watching it going on. There is no interest in what is behind my
smile. No way. You're an idea.
There is nothing. So you sit there, and I've done that. Sit and watch as your face gets sucked off or whatever.
And you can feel just, it. You can feel it.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying. You feel it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can even just feel people's gaze on you.
Yeah.
And the way that they're looking at you, not looking at you in admiration, looking at you, sizing you up. Almost like you're, you know how they have cattle auctions and they bring the cattle in and all the men are betting on the cattle? I feel like that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a horrible book. And so in many ways, I just shut down, you know. Is it possible that someone can be interested in your mind, in what, you know, as you get older, what actually improves and becomes more exotic?
Right.
There's no interest in it. It's just, how do you look, you know?
Well, it's a complete worship of the body right now, completely.
Yeah. Of the exterior. So you're pushed out into your skin.
Which has become pornographic.
Yeah, you need to stop. After your skin, there needs to be nothing else there.
Yep. That's it.
Yeah.
Like a statue. You're just an object.
Yeah, a movable statue that preferably doesn't talk too much.
Like these sex robots that they're making. They're making sex robots for men.
Right. Oh, there you go.
Yeah, they're realistic. They have heartbeats and they have, you know, like arm hair. They're very realistic. Oh, I'm dead serious. I mean, it's disgusting. And they like parade them around proudly. You know, this is my girlfriend. And it's just so sick that a person can actually have some kind of gratification from a plastic object, but that just tells you where our head's at right now.
How much of it, though, is to do with the fact of how frightening women are.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and we were chatting a bit about this the other day, and, you know, one of the things I wondered was that, we talked about how powerful and strong women are.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very unsexy thing. It's a very not hot thing to think about how strong and powerful women are. You know, I was at the library yesterday and I was looking through a book of photographs, like, you know, famous photographs. And there was one of a Russian woman in 1956 who was practicing before the Olympics. And I don't know, I think she's thrown a javelin or something. I'm not sure. So her arms right back and she hasn't shaved under her arms. And
oh my God.
Oh, no. Which I have to say, you can't help but notice straight away. It's just like, because it's not allowed. But besides that, she's got this, the intensity on her face, the concentration. She is just, every fiber of her being is focused on what she is doing, which is throwing this thing as far as possible to the best of her ability. It's like the supreme warrior kind of thing. And I just thought, whoa, that is so not okay, you know?
That's not sexy.
No. And then later on through the book, I kept looking at it because I thought, I like this. I like the intensity. This woman is giving everything to what she is doing. She is 100% committed. Yes. And I thought about how it's not okay for women to be like that. And I looked further through the book, and I couldn't help but noticing the difference. You have all these demure women sitting, and the difference between her and these other women, and it's shocking.
Yeah.
The pretend weakness, okay? Because what women do is they do pretend weakness.
Oh, yeah. That's not real.
It's an act because what's expected, but they're not. You cannot carry a child and give birth and be a weak person. It's not possible. Exactly.
And while you were telling that story, I was thinking about, because I've been studying to become a doula.
And it's just explained to people who don't know, which is probably most of us.
Yeah, it's basically like a labor assistant, a labor coach, just basically someone that's there that can help the woman move into different positions or basically is just there for emotional support. The one that's letting them know you're okay, your body knows what to do, let it do it. If you have to make an ugly face, if you have to get in a weird position with your leg up and you're on a table, whatever. And the thing is, women know how to give birth innately with no problem, but they've been taught, oh, you have to be modest, or you can't make these ugly faces, that you can't look unattractive.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, the sheer power that a woman can exhibit when giving birth is amazing. It brings tears to my eyes because it's so amazing. And I think that a lot of people are scared of that. And that's why we've been put into this little box of being impish and being coy and wearing heels all the time, you know, and that's not a woman. A woman is fucking powerful.
She is. And the thing,
what kind of face she has to make.
She's so powerful that, but she's not a threat.
No, never. No, I mean, come on. Look at how much shit we've all been given, right? But women especially. Have we once tried to, most women, right? We've never tried to date another person. We've never, and we've taken so much shit, but then just said, okay, you know, and you know what the thing I love about women? I was talking to my friend about this the other night. We don't need credit. We don't need to have our fucking name on a plaque somewhere. We don't have to have a fucking statue made out of us in a fucking park. We know our power, and we don't have to be credited for it. And I think that's so beautiful.
Okay, so I've got to say this because I had an idea come to me a while ago. It's like a cross between an idea and a vision, and I'm pretty sure I explained it to you. And it was, so thinking about the male energy as these obelisks, you know? So
yes, everyone knows. Yes.
Okay, but the image that came to me was, it was an underwater scene. So you've got all these obelisks under the water, and they're all pointing up to the sky. They're all completely separate. There's just one of them, you know, one here, one here, one here. Yeah. They're all very much alone, but they're just being as big and erect and look at me as possible.
Yep.
But nothing, there's no connection. And then, so that was what I got, my feeling for the male energy. And then what came for the female energy was these tiny little fish. These tiny little fish with little bits of seaweed in their mouth that were swimming in and out of these obelisks, weaving the seaweed in between them so that you created this connection.
Yes.
And I just thought, well, that feels so right. Okay, yeah. There's nothing wrong with the male energy, you know, just thrusting up but it's me, I'm look at me, this is, and you look to what you said about the men. You think about every time I come across this, some guy who has invented something or come up with something, which is sheer brilliance, I'm not going to knock it for a second.
Right.
But if you look, say, websites or books, their name is often bigger than the thing that they have created. And their name is so important. So everything is about this thrusting up, this solid, singular person by themselves. You know, it's not one person plus one person else. It's just me. I've done this. This is my work.
Right.
And so the feminine energy was these tiny little fish just swimming in and out, in and out, in and out, weaving between so that you created a connected pattern. Suddenly, all these solid, lonely, dried obelisks were connected by this weaving energy. And I believe that is what one of women's great strengths is that we weave. Men Okay, so they stand up, they stand solid, but they stand alone, and they can just dry out in the sunlight. The female energy just weaves through and joins and gives them connection. It's not seeking to take over. I think maybe this is why men fear us so much, because we do have a great power, but our power is not to be famous. It's not for you to know our name. It's not to be recognized with anything in particular. It's that, well, one, we see you for what you are. We don't fear you. We want to help you. We don't want to take away any of the things that matter to you, like your, you know, your upthrust, your, you know, need to create something amazing to be remembered by. This is absolutely fine. We work with that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So in my work, I consider myself a weaver. I will take from the work of Edward de Bono. I would take from the work of Robert Fritz. I will take and I will weave them together. I am not making them any less, but I do feel that by weaving, rather than just having one person on their own, by weaving the different brilliance of these people together, something far more valuable is created, something that can be digested. You turn it into something that is digestible, whereas often it's brilliance, but it's just not quite so easy to, it needs to be mixed with other flavors. You know, it'd be like having a plate of food. And if it was a sort of the male energy, you just have one thing on your plate.
Right. Yeah.
You just have one thing. That's it. Because this is it. And it has its name. You know, it's a steak. It's a steak. Yeah. And you just have steak. And it is the steak.
But
woman energy comes in and she cooks it in a certain way and she puts sauce on it. And actually, I don't think either of us eat meat, so we could have something more vegetarian. But and add other things to the plate and decorates it and decorates the table. And just, you know, it brings warmth and digestibility to something.
And life, too. You know, even just going back to that image, which you did tell me about a while ago and it's stuck in my head. So I'm so glad that you brought it back up. But if you think about these stone obelisks and then you're bringing algae and wrapping it within them, you're bringing life to something that's set in stone. You know, you're bringing another element of life to it.
Yeah, you're giving it, exactly. It just, they seem to stand.
Softening it.
Yeah, did you look the way they're just so lonely and so dry?
Yeah.
Woman is the moisture, you know. I think that's why that image is under the sea. We bring the moisture. We're not trying to be the obelisk.
No.
Honestly, I couldn't be bothered.
And we're not trying to chop off any testicles at all. None. not even one.
No, because they look bad enough on a man, but lying on the ground is going to look terrible.
One would look really weird. We wouldn't want to chop off something that, I know, in a sense, we kind of need to bring forth new life.
Yeah.
So we would even do that. It would be counterproductive.
Exactly. And I think maybe that just men feel that they put male thinking upon the female. And, okay, you're going to hate us then. Because you're going to see, yeah, we have this ability to bring forth life. So, oh, danger, danger.
Yeah. But
we don't have the male brain. And every time I want to try and say something, I get nervous because there seems so much rage towards women and I don't.
Yes.
And look, I grew up with a mother from not even hell, something I know how awful they can be.
Right, right.
Okay? Just like. It's not every single person because, oh, all women are like this. No, there's so many terrible, unpleasant women out there.
Yeah.
As there are many, many unpleasant and terrible men. You can't just go and grab a whole race, you know, a whole species or whatever, and just go, a whole sex and go, it's like this.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But if we're not going to work towards building a path towards a future we want, if we're just going to go and finger point, you know,
right.
There's good people out there. Why are we not working with them and becoming better people ourselves?
Yes.
It's that if you can finger point for the rest of your life until your finger turns all wrinkly and arthritic and, well, if that's what makes you happy, fine. You know,
not what I want.
No. Oh, I'll tell you something naughty I've been thinking about too, as far as it's just that men thing as well, or as far as women, this, you know, this need for women to look good, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I was thinking about what it comes down to. So women can be we say they're jealous of each other. That's not actually true. It's a very manipulated thing. But women, it's put towards looking good, right? It's very big. It's looking good for men. So, you know, and you see so many men. Number one thing, when they talk about, if they're talking about women, they're talking about the small, very small group of women who are hot. Mm-hmm. The rest of the species of women is just non-men. They don't really exist. Okay. So within this species of women, all that matters is how they look. If they are, you know, hot, and women are competing to get that attention, to look really hot.
Yeah.
So what I was thinking about was, if you look at that, just, I mean, honestly, just be willing to look as it is, reality. And I thought about a headstone on a tomb. So, you know, a gravestone. And say you had someone like, and not that I'm trying to kill her off, and I don't watch many movies, but I'll go for Scarlett Johansson because she's the last person I can remember who looked hot in the movies.
Yeah.
So, and all her ability is not about any acting. It's just what matters about her is how she looks, right?
Right, right.
So you would have, for if they died, this is how they would be, I think, or how they could be framed. The name plus a penis rating. Okay, so it's like a star rating, but you'd have a penis rating. So she might get, you know, you get a 5 penis rating is like, just can't get any better. So I don't know. And so she might be like a 4 penis rating. So you would have 4 penises on there, on her tombstone, and that would be it. So her claim to fame would be how high was her penis rating? This is what you leave to the world. This is what matters.
Yeah.
You know what your penis rating was.
Yeah.
And isn't that just be a little bit sad? Doesn't that just seem a little bit stupid?
Just a little.
So women are competing with each other to have a higher penis rating.
Wow. You know, that's so true. That is so true.
But we don't see it. We don't, because we're played off with each other and, you know, everything. But it really, that's what it comes down to. It actually just comes down to whether or not a man wants to stick his penis in you.
Yeah, and that's the end all be all of your worth.
Yeah, and did you, when you were growing up and you mm-hmm. thought about what you wanted to be, was that it? You know, was that your greatest dream?
No.
It's not possible.
That's why I remember we were talking about this on the first show we did, the women's show, about, oh God, my thoughts are escaping me, sorry.
No, it's fine, you just
ramble along. So, okay, puberty. So we all kind of had the same idea that we felt after we went through puberty as almost as if our lives were over.
Yeah.
And then we had to pick the two paths, like the good girl, bad girl.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where it stemmed. Finally, we realized, oh, my dreams, my thoughts, they don't mean anything in this world. I have to fit into this mold. And I mean, what a fucking awful realization to have to come to.
It's death. It's so painful.
Yeah. That should be a time of celebration, you know? Like, yeah, you are growing up. You're just going to keep getting better and better and better. But it was like, no, you're not ever going to be good.
No, and you've reached your penis rating stage. From now on, comes down to.
Yes, exactly. Now you have to work towards this goal.
Yeah.
Instead of what you really would like to do.
Yeah.
It takes precedence over everything.
It does. So what happens when, before that, your mind mattered to you so much, or different types of creation mattered, suddenly it's nothing.
No. Yeah, and it's sad now because I see different friends that I have, their younger siblings who are, you know, maybe 10 years old. And first of all, they're going through puberty a lot earlier because of all the shit that's in our food. Mm-hmm. But I see them starting to dress really provocatively at a very young age. I mean, wearing bras already.
Yeah.
Wearing makeup. Being concerned more about, oh, this is my favorite shopping store. I don't fucking care what your favorite shopping store is. What are you passionate about? What makes you excited?
Yep.
And it really pisses me off to see. It's not even just like, oh, that's so sad. I get fucking pissed.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It's beyond criminal.
Yeah.
It's evil. It's pure.
It is
evil.
It really is.
It's the loss of everything, you know, and. Oh, it's not just the loss, you know, it's the loss of innocence, you know, they used to be, you know, now they're all, you know, they're like prostitutes or whatever, but
right.
But they're still meant to look good. They're still meant to, most of the push on the world is still, they should be looking very good and, you know, how they look now, they should be looking like that in 5 years' time, you know, it's just too early, but they're still meant to look like that.
Yeah. Oh, wait till you're 18 to wear that fucking mini skirt with heels.
Yeah, exactly.
And then it's okay.
Yeah. It's a bit young now, but I want it later. As opposed to, what about, what about your passion? Do you have, your passions? Yeah.
Like, why are you excited to wake up every morning? Is it to put your fucking makeup on? No.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's just to live. To be allowed to live. It seems that's not okay.
No.
You know, it seems that's not okay. And you cry, in a sense, for the rest of your life because it died, you know. You reach puberty and, you know, now you're going for your penis rating.
Yes. And this just kind of sparked something from yours and Kyle's conversation about the light and the dark.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of our culture has become so pornographic where basically sex is constant. I mean, during the day, women are dressed up as sexual objects.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of people associate, you know, making love with being in darkness or by candlelight or something, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it seems as if the light has taken over where sex is being thrown out into the light under a big spotlight. I mean, you have porn where it's always, like, lots of lighting.
I agree with you totally.
Close-ups. I mean, think about it. If you're in dark with somebody and your bodies are communicating to each other, it doesn't fucking matter if they have nice legs or, you know, of course you want to be attracted to somebody, but it's because of their spirit. It's not because they have a nice rack or he has a big penis or, you know what I mean? It's not important like that. When two bodies come together, that can be beautiful, but it doesn't have to be shown in the light.
Exactly. 100 million percent agree with you. I thought the same, you know. It's not meant to be in the light. It's not.
No, it's not. We're parading around every day. Sex.
It's just not right. You're exactly right. It is bodies talking to bodies. Bodies talking to bodies don't use the light.
No.
You know?
And they don't need to see. They don't need to inspect everything and look at it. I mean, come on, we feel like we're being sized up when we have clothes on. Can you imagine being naked and being in the light? You feel as if you're being evaluated.
Oh, but
like
it's
someone's
wrong.
Taking measurements on you, like, oh, wait, that's weird. She has a weird mole. Oh, she has a pimple on her butt. Nope, not going to. Like, are you fucking kidding me? Come on. Like, ugh.
Yep. It is, but I think the females are for the darkness, and that is where their bodies belong, in the darkness with candlelight. Sure, candlelight, fine. Harsh light, no. It's not about that. It's not for
that. All girls, I remember me included, we always used to think, oh, my body is so fucked up because, you know, when I look at it in the mirror and the light, I don't look like I should. I don't look like somebody from a magazine. But you don't have to look a certain fucking way.
Yes, you do. You're not reading enough magazines.
I just spoke some serious words.
You did. They're brilliant. It's exactly so. This light, this takeover of the light is not, it's wrong. There's something really sick about it.
Yeah.
It's put light in places where it doesn't belong.
It's like exposing things harshly.
It is exposing. And
like dissecting them.
It is, and I wondered about autopsies. You know, this is something, you know, you're ripping open body, putting light does not belong inside the human body.
No.
it's light is just being put everywhere. Everything's got to be ripped open and exposed. And, you know, if you want to, you know, you have to kill something in order to autopsy it, to open it up to see what's inside it. You have to kill it first. You know, it's almost like light is this, it's got to this killing place. It's killing everything.
Yeah. Well, like you said, I mean, a lot of the rituals would take place at high noon when the sun is its strongest.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like beaming that spot. I mean, think of the spotlight of a show or, you know, the movie set lights, the brightest lights you could ever see.
Mm-hmm.
It's exposing something that, I wish I could put it into words. I can see pictures in my head of what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, you can feel it out. You can feel it. You said, you know, you feel good at night. I said, I often go out for walks at night. The thing I like, the time of day I dislike the most, I really don't like it, is the afternoon.
Yes.
It's heavy, oppressive. I wish I could just sleep. I'd sleep through that. It's too much. It's too heavy. It's invasive.
Yep. Even I feel more comfortable if I'm meeting a group of people that I've never met before. And we're meeting in broad daylight, I am so self-conscious. I feel like every little thing I do, every little movement that I make, if I blink my eyes, if I move my hand, I feel like it's being watched.
Wow.
But when I'm around a group of people at night sitting outside with a couple candles, I feel so relaxed. I feel so okay because I know the light isn't shining on me and I'm not being dissected.
Wow. You know, I was thinking just last night about how I've heard about people, like, if you introduce people in the dark and they can't see each other, how much better they communicate.
Yes. It's so true.
Yeah.
It's just going off of instincts, first of all, because you can't really see them. Exactly. You're going off of their energy and their ideas and what they have to offer, what they're saying.
Yeah.
What they
and you feel, like. The thing is, you feel more comfortable too. Like we talked about this when we were doing the women's show. There was no way in hell or heaven that we could have done that show if it was televised.
Oh, are you fucking? I would know.
I would have shriveled up to nothing. I would have just this. But this is darkness for us. You see, this talking is darkness. I love it because
I love it too.
You know, we're just the voice and the ears, and there's no intrusive light and looking because, you know, for a woman. Well, I know for me. In fact, a little while ago, a friend of mine put a picture of me on Facebook. And I felt like she had thrown acid in my face.
Oh, yeah.
And I just deactivated my Facebook. It got me so deeply. I just deactivated my Facebook. I just pulled right away. And it just burned me.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to be looked at. I don't want anyone to look at me. If they will hear me, I can come alive.
Yeah.
But it's like when they look at me, it's like it kills me.
Yeah. I definitely know the feeling. For me personally, I love to sing. Okay, I feel the most alive when I'm singing. But I hate when people will ask me to sing a song and then all watch me. Or I used to be able to sing live. I don't really think I could do it anymore, honestly. And then, you know, of course, that's, you should be able to play concerts and you should be able to get up there on stage. But I just hate people looking at me. I'm okay with singing a song and then having someone listen to it, or if I was hidden, but I feel so exposed up there by myself, and I'm bearing my soul. I feel so vulnerable, and I just don't like it.
Yeah. You know, I've thought, you know, it actually might be good to have yashmak and...
To have what?
You know, the yashmak, what the Middle Eastern women wear, so that covers their face and just their eyes, and you just feel so much freer.
Yeah.
Because then someone has to treat you as a human being and not as, you know, what's your penis rating?
It's so funny that you mentioned that because a friend was telling me about his friend that wears one of those. And she doesn't have to do it. Her family isn't super religious, but she likes to wear it because people talk to her like she is a human.
Wow.
Yeah. I swear to God.
Do you know what you just said there? That makes me think. That I think that's the thing I miss so much. Not feeling like you're being talked to as a human being. Somehow, if you're a woman, you're just not quite a human being. Not with other women, usually.
No.
I don't know what species we are. Some kind of a little bit of a weird species. And it's hard when you love good conversation and you love ideas. And
you're starving for it.
Oh, it's, yes. Starving, exactly.
starving and looking for it everywhere and being disappointed a lot of the times because you're not an equal in that conversation.
Yeah. And what, you make yourself small? I mean, that's why I have to do my writing, because there's no limits. I can be as big as I need to be. I can be as human as I need to be.
Yep.
Because I can't help it, actually. You know, I'm sorry.
Bad.
I can't help it. Unfortunately, I'm a human being of the wrong sex, but and yet, you know, I wouldn't. I used to think it would be so much easier to be a man. I just used to wish I was a man. Just, I could have a life. I could do things. I could have adventure. But I've come to realize that I'm in many ways a lot freer as a woman, because I can have emotions and feelings and I can talk about them.
Yes.
And then I can use those. They become my tools for weaving. Okay. So they're very powerful for me. And so I don't wish anymore. You know, I thought men had it really easily, but, you know, in the conversations that we had with Fitzy and originally with Michael, you got to see that it's, you know, men don't have it easy at all.
Oh, no.
You know,
no.
And they're, you know, that having to strive, having to be that obelisk, you know, that.
Right, and not being able to show any kind of emotion because that's weak.
Yeah, and what they would tell you, that they don't want it anyway. That there's nothing good to come from it, and it's, you know,
logic.
Yeah. And I think, well, I couldn't do what I do if I didn't have access to these emotions. I couldn't. I'd be mute.
It's fuel to your fire, really.
It is, and you learn how to use it, you know, so it goes from being something that's so awful to something that you use.
I'm sorry, I just had an image in my head when we were talking about weaving.
Mm-hmm.
I thought of knitting, right? And you have needles, right?
Yep.
So we could liken that to needles that have been stuck into us, that have been so painful that we've removed from ourselves, and now we're using them as a tool to knit a huge quilt or to knit something.
Yeah, that's brilliant. That is it, because, and this is what it seems to come down to, is that of what I've found that I'm doing, I didn't realize I was doing it, is that you turn your own pain around.
Yes.
You know, because if you, and this is what we can do in the West, you know, this is what we have, the trauma of the West is unpardonable. So huge that we cannot and have been unwilling to comprehend how vast, it's just disgusting. We just push it. No, it can't be that bad. Look, you know, they had it worse in the past. They've got it worse in that country. We've got it easy. So we'll do anything but look at it. But if we look
diminish
at
it.
Yeah. So, no, you turn and you look. You have the guts and the courage to look at it, and then, like you say, you pull those needles out and you start crafting.
Yeah, you don't pull them out and say, oh, poor me, I'm in so much pain. You're like, no, fuck this, I'm going to make something out of this.
Yeah, or if it's a man, they just stick more of them in and go, look what I can handle.
Yeah. You know what,
But, you know, well, a man doesn't have to knit because that would be too scary, but he could go and build a fence or something, you know, build something with the needles. He could do. Craft something in engineering, but if you do not have a commitment to your fellow human beings, what else is there? You know, what else is there?
Nothing.
There is nothing.
Unhappiness.
Yeah, but if you have commitment, then anything that you've been through now, it is, you own it 100%. You have complete copyright. Every single pain, all the anguish of your life, everything, every ability that you have, you put them together whatever way you want to, and you craft something new, is good. What was that, sorry?
So a new pattern.
Yes, that is it. That is, we are pattern-making creatures, so that's fine. We create new patterns. The thing is, you just don't get stuck in that new pattern. You have to be willing to allow that pattern to change in time to create new patterns. It's how we work. So we seem to be very much, we're like a build and then a plateau place for a while, but then we need to break it apart again or build again and reach a plateau, and that's how we move. There isn't this just one long happy ever after.
No. And I love what DeBona was saying that you were talking about last time we had a conversation, how in order, you can break patterns, but in order to form a new one, you have to throw in something weird, something completely outside.
That's what I'm saying about why families have to allow strangers in. It's exactly that reason.
Yes.
You know, you doom your family if you shut down and go, oh, no, it's just us. We're going to do it differently. It's not going to be like, you know, no.
If you're not growing, then you're dying.
That's right. And you have to have the intention to grow. You have to have the intention to live. And that will that can take you so far, because intention just keeps going. You weave with it. It's part of the energy that you're weaving something with.
Yeah. I just wanted to bring something up because I jotted it down as you were speaking earlier. I remember you brought this idea up to me, and I don't know if you've spoken about it on any shows or podcasts, but this was probably, I think I was home for Christmas when we were talking, and you were telling me how you were looking at the yin and yang symbol, right? And how you almost saw that it might be symbolic of semen and menstrual blood. I don't want to bring up something crazy, but I think that it had so much validity to it, and if you could speak about it again, that'd be awesome.
Sure. Yeah, I was thinking about it actually earlier as well. It was looking at the yin yang symbol, because you can look at that, so that you can look at it in so many different ways. But one of the way I looked at it in terms of male and female. So then I got to wondering that so each symbol has a small circle of the other within it, and so I wondered if symbolically, the male, the little circle in the middle represented the female essence, which would be sperm, okay? Because fluids coming out of the human body is really female stuff, you know? It's very much, it's a feminine part of, it's what we do, you know? We leak all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And so also I looked at with the female that the masculine part would be menstrual blood, because bleeding is generally, it's the male thing. It's what they do. It's their strength to go to war and be battered and bloody. And so that's what I felt, that with menstruation, and perhaps this is why it's so reviled, is because it is the masculine energy. We're doing, with when you menstruate, you're doing a masculine thing. You are bleeding, yet you're not dying. It's a very powerful thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, very, very powerful.
7 days bleeding without dying.
Yeah.
And without even in our natural state, we don't really have cramps if we're allowed to experience this thing without having to go to work, or, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be a painful thing, but it's such a powerful thing.
Yeah, and it goes against everything we're told about the female, you know, in terms of she should all be pretty and, you know, lovely.
Right.
You know, with nice flowing dresses and high heels and everything. And here you've got this, like, really what seems like a repulsive, non-feminine thing. This is bleeding.
Yeah.
And yet, now look at the male side. You've got, how is it that they do this? But they do. An ejaculation is this, like, white, virginal fluid cut out of their bodies. But no, this is really masculine. You know?
Oh, yeah.
No, it's not. Because that fluid is life creating.
Yep.
Okay, there's nothing about death in that at all. It's all about life creating.
Yeah.
In that moment is that letting go, this fluid comes out of their body, is a feminine element, a feminine energy.
Right.
They're all masculine, but that bit there. And again, with the women, it's that this is very masculine. We are mostly whatever the sex we are, but we have within us each of these elements. And it seems to me that looking at it from that point of view, that to me that made a lot of sense.
Yeah. And I think it also speaks to, like, the speeds that we vibrate at. For a man, ejaculation is a very fast event.
Mm.
But bleeding is, it's longer, right? You're bleeding for longer. So I just think it's kind of the speed at which the masculine and feminine energy travel.
Yeah, that's a very good point as well. Very good. And so it fits. So the men are doing their energy at their own masculine speed, and the women are doing their
energy, masculine energy
at their feminine speed, you know?
Exactly. The slower, long, because you have the ejaculation, which is very short, but it's very powerful.
Mm-hmm.
But then the woman keeps the baby in her womb for 9 months. I mean, that is very, that's a long time.
Yeah, because that's the feeling, that's the slow, the dark slow. Of the winter. The immense power, but it's hidden power. And see, there it is again, why men don't need to fear women. The hidden power. We don't seek to come in and take over. It's not our nature.
We do
the slow, slow, bit by bit, moment by moment, day by day, month by month.
Yep.
You know, we are a horizontal energy, a bridging energy to the male, ejecting upwards energy, you know?
Right.
How does one take, it's not possible. You know, you don't need to worry about us. We're not out to get you.
No, that's the, I wish I could communicate this to the whole world. We don't want that. No. No.
No, you know, and so it's very hard because we are not a threat. I have no interest. You know, it just could.
So that's the last thing on our mind. That's not important to us.
Yeah. To be honest, it's just boring.
Yeah,
you know?
What else I can do?
Yeah.
That's like elementary.
for us, that takeover is boring. Now, there, you know, we have to, you know, there is within our world, there is this massive push towards the media, the new woman, you know, who's been affected by the media and turned into this, that, and the other, okay? If you want to go and prove, you can't. That's not natural feminine energy. That is, what's the word? It's been abused. It's been twisted and contorted. It is not the natural energy. You know, you do not need to fear. Go on.
I said it's been infected.
It has. It has, you know. But getting angry and jumping up and down isn't going to change anything. You need to support the women who are using and trying to work with this natural female energy, but it's not being good girls dressed in flowery dresses and you know, long flowing hair, and that's not them. If you would look, they're so weak. The women who are going for their penis rating are very weak.
Yeah, well, they've abandoned their power. They left it because in order to function in that program, you have to leave your power at the door. And you have that choice.
Yeah, it's a game. But men, I think, have been trying to think that this is natural feminine because it fits with what they've been told is their natural masculine, which, you know, again, when Michael and Fitzy were on, you know, all that time ago, and just willing to speak forth and going how tired they are of that program, that's another pattern. And maybe it's time to cut across the pattern and create a new pattern, or to say that, well, that pattern was always kind of dodgy anyway. You know, that didn't. Maybe we're going to start over, go right back, and create one that works for us.
Yeah.
You cannot trust anything that's coming through the media. These are not natural patterns. Okay, then, yeah. The pattern will be because you stopped and, well, this works for me. I like this. And I'm willing to look at this and bring these together and try this out.
You're basically creating your own language.
Yes.
That fits for you.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. You know, if you've only got two choices, male or female, whoa, you haven't got a lot to go on. If you've got human being in there, you know, with a an accent on male or female, awesome.
Yeah.
It's a massive push about being male or female. That's why my thing is about just, I want to be human.
Yeah.
And connect with other human beings.
Yes, which I feel like we've all completely forgotten how to do.
Yeah.
We're like some little mutants. I don't really know what we are right now.
Well, that's another pattern. We've got the human pattern.
Yeah. This is what a human is. This is what they do.
Yeah, and the human Western pattern is very machine-like.
It's anything but human.
Yeah, yeah. It's a machine pattern. It's a logical pattern. It all fits together, and it looks like it makes perfect sense. It's just that there isn't any room for, you know, emotions or feelings or none of those. And you can't have those because, you know, the Western machine doesn't have those. We're trying to get rid of them more and more.
Yeah.
Well, I think we've done very well today. How do you feel?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I feel very good.
Yeah, we're just coming up to almost 2 hours now, which is not too bad at all.
Wow.
So anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to talk about?
No. Really, the two notes that I had jotted down was the yin-yang, because I wanted you to talk about that, and also the light versus dark.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we've really covered everything that I could think of right now.
I'm just quickly going back to see if I only jotted down a few notes because I felt it really had to be just what came out on the day.
Yeah.
The bit that Edward de Bono talks about with what he calls the sequence trap, which I do think it just really, we do need to be aware of it. So whatever comes in, the sequence that it comes in, it affects how you process everything else that comes in. So for us with human beings, when we're born, the sequence is that we are with our family, and it does have this massive impact. To understand, but every form of information that comes into us, depending on which way it comes in, we're alive, you know. So the Western idea is that we're kind of like machines and it's all logic, but we're not. We're so fluid, so that when one piece of information comes in, it changes everything else. It creates, like if you have a landscape and it rains and a trickle of water flows one way, as the rain keeps coming, it's going to follow that particular path.
Right, right.
Whether or not that information or that is good or doesn't really matter, a path has been set up, and the information or whatever comes after that will follow that. It's what makes it so important to keep, to look back and see where our original path started. Yeah. And how we fitted everything that followed, you know, in our families. That's where we started from.
Yep.
So it created like trenches, if you want, in our mind. And the rest of our life has followed those trenches. And within the West, there is so much trauma. There is so much trauma from this pattern called a family that has been so, it's gotten very, very sick. Partly because it's been made so insular. Yeah. You know, time and time again in my life, I've suffered because I felt I didn't have a family, because I wanted a family so much. Yeah. But always it seemed that, and I would like try to get into another family. I would try to find another family.
Oh my gosh, yes.
The message come back was no, this is our family. You know, you don't belong here. In some way or other, the message come back, you know, no, you don't belong here. And so always on the outside, you know, that hungry urchin looking in through a window and it looks so good in there, and not having the understanding that probably that's just as fucked in there as anywhere else, you know?
Yeah.
So it's just the reason for today's show is to try and out families.
Yeah.
To try and be a friend to people who have been locked in family thinking, in family systems that have been so destructive for them.
Yeah.
If you were lucky enough to have a good family, and if it was a good family, it was because they allowed lots of outsiders into your world to expand, and they cared about what you wanted, then wonderful. But I think that's so few and far between.
Yeah. Actually, I remember being a little kid, and when I was upset with my parents, if they'd send me to my room, I remember yelling down to them. I was like, I know I'm adopted. You guys aren't my real parents.
I really felt that way. I just felt kind of, I was wandering, looking for something.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, I've gone back because my mother's now, she's been in a mental ward for the last nearly 6 months now. And so her house is empty. And I have gone back to that house so many times looking for something.
Yeah, just, maybe looking for you.
Yeah, I think. Or just looking and looking. And I have cleaned. There's almost nothing left. You know, I've gone through and cleaned everything. And the other day, I was, I go and I feel the energy, you know, and I think, oh, that bit's clean now. That bit feels good now. And I went into the bedroom that I shared with my sister for so many years, and I looked in the cupboard. I thought, that doesn't feel clean enough. So I was cleaning the walls in there, and then I was cleaning the inside, the door on the inside. And as I did so, the liquid, the wet cloth, some words started to appear.
Wow.
And it said, it had my name, and it said, is called Bright Eyes.
Wow.
And I was like, so, and it was down quite low, so I must have been quite small when I carved that into the inside of the door, and I didn't even know it was there.
Wow.
And I was like, whoa, what is that? I'm not sure what message I was saying to myself, you know. I sing that song a lot in my head these days.
Yeah.
But it almost like this self over all those decades, you know, just a message to myself. And there's my future self, you know, kind of as if we finally met up.
Right. It's like you left yourself a little clue.
Yeah. And it was funny because it's on the inside of the closet. So it's like, you know, getting it out of the closet.
Yeah.
No, bringing it out of the closet into, well, then you'd say into the light. You know, it's not against the light. The light is very useful.
Right, and necessary in ways.
When the time is right.
Yes, yes. It's you a know? Balance. It's a balance. Yeah.
It's very much learning to, but we made the dark so bad,
right,
and light so good that we're so light heavy.
Mm.
You know, it could have gone the other way. You know, it's not one is good and one is bad. It's learning to find a balance so that, you know, we use them both for what's best for us. So at that time it was right, then it was right, but it's been in the dark, almost like it took all these years for it to be the right time, or the, into that womb, in that closet womb for so long.
Yep.
See, I think this year has so much potential, and we just only need to be willing to look honestly to it's finding a way to accept what has happened, what has been, how things are. It's not condoning it, and it's not trying to force yourself to forgive it. It's just going, this actually is my reality. This was my reality. And I think that when you can do that, you start to be able to digest at last things that have stuck in your gut for so long. But until you say, yes, I see that, that's how it was, your digestive system cannot get to work on it. It's going to sit there. It will sit there for the rest of your life. It doesn't, you know, it's just how it will be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, what do you think? Shall we...
Yeah, I think so. Unless you have more to add.
I think I've caught it.
Yeah. It's been really awesome.
I really, I can't say I appreciate you coming because that sounds like it's my show and you come along, because it's not. It could not exist without you. This is our show. This is, and, you know, I said the other day, it feels like it's ours in a sense by right, because it was us and Anna and Shannon and Catherine who stepped up the very first time to just lay ourselves bare, not expose, not like that, to ourselves bare in an attempt to make a connection with other human beings, and especially I think with the male population, to show that we're not a threat. We're not after anything. And if you believe we are, you are it's just not how it is. You're not seeing clearly.
Yeah.
And also for the women to show that this is what women do. We come together. We don't seek to go one on top of the other.
No, we don't bitch. We don't gossip.
No, not when we are in our proper energy. And,
right.
You know, those images of bitchy, gossipy women, again, that's pushed on us. You know, it's so, I see that now I watch in TV shows, I watch how they just push it out there and make it look like it's so normal. You're expecting it to happen.
Yep.
Without saying, well, yes, actually, women work together. That's what they do.
Yeah.
They don't seek this, you know, name in big shining lights. They're just there getting on with it.
Yep.
So, yeah, it just seemed right that we come back together again and just see how far we've come, you know, along the track since all those years ago, back in January.
Well, I needed this. I told you. I was like, I need this.
Yeah.
So it's good. I've had all these thoughts marinating in my brain.
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to speak them.
Oh, I really enjoyed this time with you, Sinead. I always do.
Same.
and I wish you so much for becoming a doula, is that right?
Yes, a doula.
Doula. Okay. That is awesome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited about it. Like you said, I think I found my passion.
Yeah. I noticed how often on Facebook and that you would put things, or you'd send links to me about the birthing, and I hadn't quite got that this is your passion, you know, that this is your...
Yeah, definitely is. Definitely is. And I think a lot of it has to do with me trying to heal myself, but in the same time I want to be there for my friends. I want to teach them the best way to bring a child into the world. I just want to help everybody. It's not even a selfish thing, you know. I feel good when I help other people. That's when I feel most alive. So,
and that's what we were saying before. See, that's what, you know, say we create this new world, that's what you're bringing. That is what you are bringing to.
Yeah.
And you're not going to wait until it happens and then do it. No.
No.
It's now.
Right now. Exactly.
Yeah. So if you're not doing something right now, well, you're not going to be doing anything next week or next month. You've already begun because you're passionate about a new path that we're creating.
Yes. Yes.
And we are. And we're not alone, you know?
Yeah, we're not.
We're not alone. Okay. All right, we'll wrap it up then. So, thank you. Thank you, Sinead.
Oh, thank you. This has been awesome.
Yeah. All right. I'll see you then.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.